Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Psst, psst. Oi, over here.
I'm Austin bound, get my feelings checked at the door.
That's right, Texas has its own community-run Linux Fest on April 10th, 2010 in Austin, Texas. Go to texaslinuxfest.org for details. And remember, get your Linux on.
I'm Austin bound, get my eyes set on the price.
Join us for the 2010 Southeast Linux Fest as we once again celebrate Linux and open source software in the GNU/South. Due to the overwhelming response last year, this year's event will be bigger, better, and longer. SELF 2010 will take place Friday, June 11th through Sunday, June 13th at the Spartanburg Marriott at Renaissance Park in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Be there for UbuCon, Fedora Activity Day, BSDA certification, Drupal camp, multiple parties featuring dual core as well as the guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000 as riff tracks, and an even more expansive group of superb speakers, sponsors, and exhibitors. SELF is free to attend, but hurry and register today to lock in the special discount room rate at the hotel. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
Psst, psst, oi! Over here! You want to buy this? It's the center of the open source universe. Picked it up last year in Wolverhampton. Only one careful owner. It's a bargain. Oi! Oi, come back! Oh. I'm gonna have to find something to do with this. Hold on a minute. Yes, that's right. On the 1st and 2nd of May this year, Liverpool is the only place to be for anyone interested in free software, free culture, and free thinking. It's the second live OggCamp event, organised by the Linux Outlaws and the Ubuntu UK podcast. We've taken the mantle from Lug Radio Live and we're not giving it back. The 1st and 2nd of May 2010 at the Blackie, Liverpool. Visit oggcamp.org for more details. Also join us on Friday, April 30th for a special free culture gig. Kick off the weekend in style with some great live music. But you might want to leave your hubcaps at home.
One, two, three...
Texas! Texas!
Thank you.
Big O! Showtime!
It's the Little Thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cats, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no fuddy-duddies that are linking bad. For the stream link, go to like the DLNGS.org. And the IC channel is the LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the cats are just about to begin.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
Promos are over.
Echo.
And we got an echo.
Echo.
God.
Echo. Sorry, I was on a different screen. Trying to upload a new word to Urban Dictionary.
Well, audio fail from Dan Washko.
TLLTS audio fail.
Yeah.
Episode 343, and he still can't get it right.
Yeah, really.
Maybe for season two we will.
Yeah.
Season two. Year two.
Season two. Season 2 when Revision 3 picks us up, right?
Year.
Only 22 more episodes to go for Season 2.
Yeah.
Anyhow, how are you guys doing? Another exciting week. Lots of things to
Great.
Talk about. Awesome guests coming on.
On happy drugs. Vicodin is awesome. That's all I'm saying.
We're going to have an intervention for you, Joel. So let's get right.
Yeah, hopefully
let's get right into it then.
Let's do it.
Guest tonight is Taurus Balrog from OpenNMS. Paris, welcome to the show. Nice talking
Thanks
to you.
Thanks for having me. You know you guys are doomed.
Why is that?
Of course.
The last long-form podcast I did was Floss 15, and they didn't have another show for like 6 months. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. That, you know,
that's Leo's fault. That's not your fault. That's for sure.
Well, they're obviously scraping the bottom of the barrel, you know, and you're calling someone like me up, but it's still fun.
No.
Don't think so.
So Taurus, for anybody who doesn't know, what is OpenNMS?
OpenNMS, well, when you start a project and you start trying to tell people about it, they come up with this thing called an elevator pitch. You're supposed to be able to describe what you do in 30 seconds or so, like on an elevator. And the one I came up with is OpenNMS is the world's first enterprise-grade network management application platform developed under the open source model. Now, the problem is I'm not a sales guy, I'm a geek, and so when anyone says things like world's first, they have to qualify it. And so if I can examine each of those little statements, we were registered on SourceForge in March 30th, 2000. So this year we hit 10. So we've been around for a while. You guys have probably heard of Nagios. Nagios started life as NetSaint, and they registered, Ethan registered his project about 2 months before we did. So roughly the same age. Now the difference between us and something like Nagios is we started out on day one trying to design an enterprise-grade tool. You guys have probably heard of MRTG or RD tool. I used to tease Toby Etiker because basically he was working at a shop and they had a 56K frame relay circuit. I'm old. I mean, back in the day, 56K frame relay was pretty cool. And he was one, you know, basically surfing porn, trying to figure out why his link was so slow. So he taught himself about SNMP, wrote a little script to go out and get some counters and draw pretty graphs so he could see what his circuit was designed. And, I mean, that worked pretty well for one device. And then they said, you know, people saw it and said, hey, can you get it to do 10 devices, 100 devices? And the problem is, starting off as he did, is kind of this quick hack, he wasn't able to scale. And so he ended up rewriting the whole thing, and that's where RD tool was born. With OpenNMS, we started off on day one. We were like, we want to create a management product that can monitor tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of devices. So that was kind of our difference from the start. We view OpenNMS, it's a network management application platform. It works out great out of the box. I mean, you pull out a box, you point at your network, you get a lot of information. But where it really shines is when you start customizing it. And so you can go through and you can customize it to really fit your environment. And then finally, the whole thing, it's 100% open source. And I wish we didn't limit a time where you actually had to sit down and say it's 100% open source, like you can be like 50% open source. It, you know, but these days you have to. So there's no special enterprise version or, you know, pay version or extra version. It's all out there. We do all of our development on a Git repository on SourceForge. Even the custom development we're hired to do. So I started working on this in 2001. So it was like I actually started on September 10th, 2001, which was a pretty easy day to remember because on September 11th, 2001, we didn't do much work. And I took it over. I worked for a company called Oculan at the time. They were the ones who started OpenNMS. And in May of 2002, two things happened. First of all, we released OpenNMS 1.0. And the second thing is Oculan got new investors. And the new investors wanted nothing to do with open source. So they basically said, well, we're not going to work on this OpenNMS thing anymore. I had come from a background of doing a lot of network management. I'm an old guy. I'm 44. And all during the 90s, I used tools like HP's OpenView, IBM's Tivoli, and they just kind of sucked where I needed them to not suck. And I saw the potential with OpenNMS. So I went to the CEO of Oculan and said, well, let me take over the project. And we talked, and he kind of looked at his watch, and he said, you know, you're off my payroll by Friday. I'll give you a couple of servers. We'll sprinkle water on you, and congratulations, you're the Open MS guy now. That was actually the easy part. The hard part was going home to my wife and saying, guess what I did, honey? I started my own company, and I'm going to sell free software. Better yet, I'm going to get a commission on free software. So we survived that, and now we've got about a dozen people in three countries. We've got customers in 22 countries, and things are flying. Things are flying.
That is nice.
I put everyone to sleep, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I was just hanging out over there on the Open NMS website. I guess one of the things that comes to my mind is a question for you right off the bat. When you said to your wife you started your own company, has it been a profitable company? A lot of people question whether they can make money off of open source software.
Well, you can't make money off of selling software that's free. I view myself and my business as the same way you'd view like a doctor or plumber. I mean, I don't know about where you guys live, but where I live, the doctors in the community are pretty much the highest paid people around. And no one goes up to them and says, hey, dude, you can't make any money because you don't sell the drugs you prescribe. You know, you go to the doctor when you're feeling bad. He has all this years of school, and he helps you get better. Same thing with our business. I mean, I used to work for this company called Predictive Systems, and Predictive Systems was strictly a services business. They didn't sell a single piece of software, but they would partner with people like HP and Micromuse and all these big vendors, and when they sold something, I was brought in to implement it. And they made tons of money. They had a huge IPO. Of course, in the bubble, it all went away, but you know, they had a really, really good IPO and were worth a lot of money for a short period of time. And and to me, there was no dichotomy between running a business that was a services business and making money at it. We have a secret, because when you start your own business, you have to have a business plan. And our business plan can be summed up in one sentence. It's called spend less than you earn. I don't know if it'll catch on, but it's really worked for us. So, yeah, we've been
pretty wise and pretty basic. You know, if only other companies did the same thing.
Yeah, but back we yeah, yeah. Let's not go there. my taxes are due in less than 2 weeks, so I've been I'm like the CEO of the Open NMS Group, but I'm also the janitor and the accountant and the receptionist. So having to do taxes kind of sucks. But no, I mean, a while back we looked into getting some like VC money, because it's kind of frustrating in that our organic way of growing, I can't grow as fast as I'd like. But you go to VCs these days and they're like, you know, well, we're looking for the next Twitter. I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I'm like, Twitter's okay, but you know, what's their revenue model? And you know, so I like a business. I was talking with this one VC guy, and he said, yeah, we're doing great. I only lost 50 grand last month. And I'm like, Betsy the banker down the street. Shoot. Yeah, I mean, sorry if I talk over you. I'm not trying to.
It's okay. We got a little bit of a lag.
But you go down, you got the baker down the street, and she may only clear 5 grand, but to me, she's a better business person than the guy who lost 50 grand last month, so.
Now, what differentiates your project, Open NMS, from other projects like Nagios or Big Brother?
If I remember correctly, Big Brother is kind of a they're kind of that hybrid, you know, shareware model. You get part of it for free, and then you got to pay. Nagios is great for what it does. We have an annual developers conference called Dev Jam. And we tend to hold it up at the University of Minnesota. And Ethan Galstead actually comes to our developers conference and hangs out for a while. One of the nicest guys in this business I've ever met. So, but the problem is, you know, what happens, I was at one site in Australia, and they had so many, in their Nagios installation, they had about 1,000 devices. And when you went to the device page, it took longer to load than the 5-minute refresh. So basically, they could never even see the whole page because it wouldn't load fast enough. You know, at OpenNMS, we've got one customer, Swisscom Hospitality Services in Europe. They're monitoring 70,000 devices with one instance of OpenNMS. I've got another client, New Edge Networks in Vancouver, Washington, and they're doing data collection on 1.2 million data points every 5 minutes. And those are the things that you can't do with like a Nagios or a Cacti, or even an OpenView or a Tivoli. So that's kind of the big differentiator. Most of us came from this enterprise commercial management tool suite. And well, here's the root of why we did what we did. When I worked as a consultant, basically I'd be basically pimped out for a week, and they'd say, "Hey, get on a plane, go to Seattle, and work with this client." And so I'd show up on Sunday night, Monday morning I'd go to the customer side, I'd install the software, everything was great, and then Tuesday around 10 in the morning I'd find a bug, like a big Madagascar cockroach-sized bug that just totally blew my week out of the water. And I'd call a vendor, and 9 times out of 10, they'd say, "Oh, yeah, we're aware of the bug. We've got a fix ready." I'm like, "Great. Love to hear it. Give me the fix." "Well, we can't." And I'd be like, "What do you mean?" "Well, you have to wait for the patch." And I'm like, "Well, when's the patch going to be ready?" And they say, "Oh, 4 to 6 weeks." And I'm like, "What am I supposed to do for the next 3.5 days? You know? Because I got non-refundable plane tickets, I got a hotel reservation, my client's expecting a solution." I saw this open source.
Suck it up and you say, "That's my payback to the community." Right?
Actually, I sometimes call my work on OpenNMS penance for all the commercial software I installed in the 90s. I'm like...
I can understand that.
And this is what's really hard to get across to people, though, is that, you know, open source is great, and I really support open source, but in certain industries like mine, it just makes sense. It's like a better solution regardless of the fact that it's open source. It's like, it's flexible, it's powerful, it's scalable, and these aren't things that you you can get from commercial vendors. So,
you know, when I look at that and I listen to you talk and I look at OpenNMS and I see that there's like a, you know, there's a lot of energy going into the product and there's a lot of passion and there's people behind it that express that same thing, you know, that you do. There's nothing more frustrating when you have something in a production environment and you're met with that kind of, "Well, yeah, we are aware of it, we got to put together a patch, or we're testing it, it won't be available for X amount of days." And I mean, if you're at the job and that is your job working for that company, that sucks in one way, but if you're like a contracted from another company and having to explain that, it's absolutely horrible to have to go through. And it really annoys everybody. It almost makes sense to say, why wouldn't people be using an open product and not have to go through with this? Because my experience with using open software, I mean, when you find a problem or have a problem, you go and you contact, a mailing list or something for that product, more than likely you're going to have the developer, the main guy, coming back to you saying, "Try this out," or whatever. I mean, there's a rapid turnaround, and I've seen it time and again.
Well, I think the big... I've been doing this for 10 years, and I think about this a lot. And I had this epiphany. I was in Australia, and I was there for 3 weeks and working at this one customer. They were one of our evil customers. It was actually the tax department for the New South Wales government. It's kind of funny. We have a bunch of clients that are involved in things like, you know, traffic light cameras and stuff like that. So we call them our evil clients. But so I'm walking down the road in Parramatta, which is in the western part of Sydney, and out in front of this Chinese restaurant, there's this lady in like a kimono, and she's handing out egg rolls. And when you think about open source, what I think happens to people who haven't experienced it, what happens is, it's like you're walking down the road and there's an alley, and this guy hops out of the alley and he's got a tray of food. And he says, "Here, eat this. It's free." I mean, the first thing that goes through your head is, you know, is this safe? Now, let's assume the guy looks like you. I mean, it's not, you know, he's not a scary person. He's not a, you know, he's just someone that on normal circumstances, you'd be inclined to trust. But it's like, the first thing is going to be, is this safe? Is this poison food, whatever? And then the second thought is something like, what's the catch? Because you're like, why is this guy giving me free food? And if it's in the context of this Chinese restaurant, they're like, oh, you eat the egg roll, it gets good to you, you get your monosodium glutamate fix on, and you're like, hey, I need to go in and get me some Mugu Gaipan. But in the software industry, they're like, well, what's the catch? And I think this is why you're seeing these kind of open core or open source companies, which have the pay enterprise version. Because when they go into a sell situation, they go in and say, you know, here's open source, and they're like, great, what's the catch? And it's like, well, if you want this functionality over here, you got to pay. And the CEO goes, ah, I figured it out now. But with truly free and open software, it's still a concept that unless you've been in that community, unless you've experienced it, you just don't get it. And it's like, well, how can it be any good if it's free? And you know, we reached the point last year we were actually profitable enough to hire marketing people. So I actually hired some really good marketing people, and they're not, you know, going out there saying OpenMS is the greatest, blah, blah, blah. They're actually talking to our customers and putting these testimonials on our website. And the idea is, well, you shouldn't trust the guy with the tray of food. But what if all your friends say, yeah, I ate from that tray, and it's great, you ought to try it. And so that's kind of where we are now, trying to, you know, evangelize this and get that word out. Did I lose you guys on the analogy?
No. So how has marketing benefited you? Because a lot of open source companies or FOSS companies don't do a lot of marketing.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I've always viewed marketing as evil. You know, because I go in and I went off on this. There's this website called Monitoring Forge. There's a company that's sucked in like $35 million in VC, and they're still struggling. And so they decided to come up with this thing called Monitoring Forge. And, you know,
yeah,
we're going to be the epicenter of all things. You had them on?
Yeah, we had them on a couple of groundwork. Or ground.
Yeah. I try not to pick on particular vendors, but when they started, they basically stole Ethan Galstead's trademark Nagios, and he had to send a cease and desist order. And ever since then, I haven't been a big fan. But no, I mean, we were invited to join, was it the Open Management Consortium, which was started by William Hurley and this guy named Mark Hinkle, and it's dead. I mean, the website, you know, basically Mark Hinkle got a job at Zenos and William Hurley got a job at BMC, and, you know, then that little thing went away. And there's this Open Solutions Alliance thing that got bought by this company in Europe. And so every week, or now I say every quarter, to be honest, we get invited, oh, you need to join this big open source promotion thing. And we've always been a little skeptical because, you know, ours is a very much a community-driven project. And we're not going to try and sell our community short. We kind of want to say, you know, go out there. It's a meritocracy. Go out and show me that you're doing good. We'll gladly join you. But we've been seeing so much people just trying to market the term open source, we don't want to deal with it. And so the Monitoring Forge comes out, and, you know, so I'm talking to my press people have kind of taught me, you know, things about marketing, and you and the lady I work with named Margaret, I mean, she worked for Ogilvy, she worked for HP, she's the fact that she's local and available was surprising, but she basically says, you know, with most companies that hire her, she has to make up news. But she's like, she hears our story and our client list and everything. She says, you guys have news. We just need to get out there. So I'm watching this Monitoring Forge thing, and they're saying, you know, we just signed up our 2,000th user. And we have over 2,000 projects on Monitoring Forge. OpenMS is not one of them. And I was just, you know, like, they did a press release on this. And I was just thinking to myself, it's like, okay, if you have over 2,000 projects, but you only have 2,000 users signed up, you know, and this is news? I mean, if you got one person from each project, one unique person from each project, you should have more than 2,000 people. And yet you're calling yourself the epicenter of all things open source monitoring. And I just can't, my bullshit meter, oh, can I say bullshit on this show?
Say whatever you want.
As long as you proceed it with the F word, or follow it with the F word.
Well, actually, that's Alan's job.
No, it's just, you know, out here trying to solve problems, and I'm not, you know, my tolerance for bullshit's pretty low. And so when I see stuff like that, I'm like, you know, I just can't, I can't keep my mouth shut, so I have to blog about it and stuff like that. But getting back to, you know, the positive thing about marketing, you know, what the first thing these guys sat down and said, well, why do you exist? And I never really tried to explain to a person who wasn't involved in open source why we were here. And, you know, we came up with this phrase. I said, look, I said, when it comes down, and this took like months where we sat around while I was trying to explain what we do and figure it out for myself. And I said, look, you know, IT is supposed to give you productivity gains. On the bottom line, you're supposed to be, you know, you spend X number of dollars on computers and software, et cetera, and you're supposed to get more than X number of dollars out. And what products like OpenNMS do is they help verify and manage that network so that you get the most value out of it. And in fact, we help get the network to work. And so we actually, that's our little new tagline now, we get the network to work. I know it sounds kind of cheesy, but, you know, to go through that exercise and try and figure out what problems you're trying to solve is very, very useful. But we had to wait several years before we actually had enough money that we could go out and hire people, you know, to do marketing, because, you know, for a long time it was survival. So.
Wow. It sounds almost like, when you talk about it, it almost sounds like a cutthroat world out there in the network monitoring business, even on the open source side, for capturing a...
You brought up groundwork. I mean, we're... If you go to Google right now and type in, without quotes, type in open source network management, four words, open space, source space, network space management. And OpenNMS is the number one hit above the Wikipedia article. And we've done nothing for, you know, search engine optimization, nothing like that. And we've had been the number one hit. Please tell me we're still the number one hit. I'm waiting for the day when I tell this story and it's not.
Yeah, you're still number one on the one I'm looking at.
Yeah. So Network World does an... Yeah. Now, if you type in monitoring, it's a little different. But if you look at InfoWorld or CNET or Network World, they'll do articles on open source network management and they won't even mention us. And so, yeah, it is a bit cutthroat. When you're sitting on like $15 million in venture capital, you go out and you go out and talk to these people. So we just had an article published in Network World, our first one, and Margaret set this up. And I learned that just like we geeks have our own little language, press people and marketing people have their own little language. And what Margaret's helping us do is navigate that community. So, like, you know, we set up this interview between Denise Doobie and one of our biggest customers is Papa John's Pizza. And so if you've ever ordered Papa John's Pizza online, we make sure that works, right? And so she had all these these background sheets and all this information that she was able to give Denise that she kind of expects. And when you're coming from, you know, I'm a geek who likes to play with computers, I don't know this stuff, and it's not really online, you can't look it up. It really, really helps. So I can't emphasize, you know, get the right marketing people. And if you can find them, hold on to them. But we're hoping that'll drive a lot more interest into the commercial side of OpenNMS. I mean, right now on .org, we get about 70,000 unique visitors a month to the .org site. And we get less than 10% of that to the .com site. And part of that is we're pretty strict about keeping .org and .com separate. I can remember a couple of these open source products. When you went to their .org site, it would redirect you to whatever .com/community. And I'm like, okay, yeah, right. But so I'm a little cynical. I apologize, but
yeah, that's pretty interesting that that if you want to really start being successful in the business world, you do have to. It's not just on technical merit alone. I mean, you have to hit the market yourself, and that's a whole skill set that most technical people don't have.
Now, the beauty of it is, though, is we've worked on, you know, we've built this community around OpenNMS. I mean, I don't know if you guys, the network management world is actually kind of small, and so forgive me if I assume you've heard certain things, but Nagios was forked last year by this group in Germany, and they call it, I think it's Insinga, some kind of weird name. And one of the reasons is if you went to SourceForge at the time and looked up Nagios, there were two committers, Ethan and one other guy. If you go to the OpenNMS's page on SourceForge, we've got over 40 because we've really, you know, one of the things we really strive to do is to, you know, encourage people in our community to contribute. I got three guys in Germany sat down and wrote a book, a 350-page book on OpenNMS. It's coming out in next month. And, I mean, I'm humbled every day that people have taken an interest in what we're doing and contribute to it. And I don't think that's possible if you keep the .com and the .org sides really, really tightly wound. And our community is our number one source of marketing. I mean, for years, and we've been in business, I've been doing this since 2002, and, you know, until last year, I didn't do any marketing. And yet we were able to get, you know, over 100 customers in 21 countries. So it is possible, but we have our Dev Jam conference, and the little bastards came up with a bingo card because I tell the same stories and use the same phrases a lot. And one of the things that I get approached with is, oh, you've done all this work. You know, can't someone just take your code and rename it and run with it? And I'm like, well, it's when it's open source, it's not about, per se, the actual code. It's more the community around it, the name, the brand that you've built. And so I say, it's like you can't take 9 pregnant women, stick them in a room for a month, and get a baby. Certain things take a certain amount of time. And that's what's happening with OpenNMS. But now we're in the, like this, it's like holding on to the tail of a dragon. I mean, we used to get one sales trickle. We call them trickles when someone calls us and is interested in our services. We used to get one sales trickle a week if we were lucky. We're getting like 5 or 6 a day now. I had to hire a sales guy. My last hire was a sales guy. And it wasn't a guy to sit there and call up and say, you know, hey, my quarter's ending. How much money can you give me? It was basic account management. We were so busy, I was forgetting to bill clients. You know, their support would run out, and I'd find out about a month later, I'm like, oh, by the way, your support ran out last month, do you want to renew? So it's radically different than when I started it, but it's a lot of fun.
Wow. Now, when you said the little bastards, you meant the marketing people, right?
No, when I said the little bastards, I meant my friends in the community. I was joking.
Your friends in the community, all right, I know.
So here we are. We're here at the University of Minnesota. What we do is every year we get everyone together. It's kind of like DebConf. It's we monitored it. We modeled it on DebConf. So everyone's welcome to attend, and we get a college. We really like the University of Minnesota. They got really good facilities. They have this thing called the club room, and it's this huge, you know, 1,200 square foot room with a big TV that we can hook the Wii and the PS3 up to, and it's got a little kitchen and great bandwidth. And it's in a dorm, so if people get tired, they can just go to bed and come back down. I mean, you know, we got this guy named Bill Ayers who's in his 60s, and he gets up in the early, you know, at 6 in the morning, but he goes to bed around 9. And then we got this other guy named DJ Greger who doesn't wake up till noon. And he comes wandering down about 1 o'clock, but he'll stay up till 4. So you really need, when you're setting up a conference like this, you really need to have a place where people can come and go as they want. And so I was sitting there talking. Let me back up. I'm getting excited now. I'm starting to run off at the mouth.
Go right ahead.
So,
keep going.
So anyway, we're sitting here, and unbeknownst to me, these guys sat down and wrote all these little stories and phrases that I use. They wrote them down into like a bingo card, and passed them around. And so here we are. We got about 20 guys at our conference, and one of my clients had come in, and I'm sitting there just talking to him off in the corner. And I used one. Maybe it was the nine pregnant women. When I used one of my phrases. And Bill Ayers, who's like the quietest guy, pipes up and goes, "Bingo!" And they all start laughing. But that's why I called them the little bastards. They're really great guys. But and that was one thing that was weird. You know, in 2002, if you went to the OpenNMS discuss list on SourceForge and you typed a question, if it got answered, it got answered by me. I mean, I spent a lot of my days on the discuss list answering questions and helping people. And around 2004, I noticed that there were all these guys, not all, but like five. So they had like five guys who were involved in the project, and they were probably spending maybe, you know, 10, maybe a little bit more hours a week helping out on a discuss list, submitting patches, you know, helping out. I said, you know, I got to have some way to recognize these guys. I can't afford to hire them. But I said, I need to recognize these guys. So I came up with this thing called the Order of the Green Polo. I mean, in our industry, logo polo shirts are kind of like currency. I mean, if you're a vendor, you show up, you give out polo shirts with your logo on them. And so I came up and says, at the time, you could buy black or white ones on our website. So I said, well, I'm going to come up with this Hunter Green one. So it's kind of a combination of the English knighthood, the Order of the Garter, and getting the green jacket for winning the Masters Golf Tournament down in Augusta. And so I went out and had all these special green shirts made up, and I invited these five guys into the Order of the Green Polo. And I said, you know, in recognition for all of your work on OpenNMS, you know, I'll give you OpenNMS.org email addresses, you got full commit access to the repository, I'll give you a nice little certificate, and you'll get this green polo. I didn't think of much of it. It just seemed like the right thing to do, you know, thank these guys for all their work. They started contributing like 20, 30 hours a week to the project. And we've grown, I think that we just inducted two guys into the Order of the Green Polo this week. So the Order of the Green Polo is like the governing board of the .org site. So they make all the major decisions. When we decided on copyright assignment, when we decide on licensing, all that's done through a vote on the Order of the Green Polo. And if you want to get into the Order of the Green Polo, you have to earn it. And existing members have to vote you in. So I have employees, people I pay, people who are on .com, who aren't members of the Order of the Green Polo. They haven't been around long enough. They haven't contributed enough to really catch the eyes of the existing people. And while we don't have a foundation, you know, short of that, we keep OpenNMS.org as independent as we can. And that has really spurred a very active community. Now, I mean, I'll look at the discuss list. We're getting about 50 messages a day on the discuss list. And I'm just too busy with other things to do much than scan them. But there's people, you know, chances are if you know how to ask a good question, you can get on our discuss list and get a good answer. I mean, we get the guys who, you know, it doesn't work kind of thing. But you know, if you come in and say, hey, I'm trying this, I get this error message, it's confusing, what am I doing wrong? Chances are you'll get an answer that'll fix your problem in a very short amount of time. I'm proud of that.
That again, that's what I find probably the godsend of a lot of the FOSS software. I mean, the community behind it, that includes people that actually actively develop the software, are always willing to help out.
Yeah. And it's when I was at Oculan and they decided to stop work on OpenNMS, I was in one of these weird positions because I was actually brought on board to build a services business around OpenNMS. So I wasn't an executive, but I wasn't, you know, kind of a foot soldier coder either. I kind of bridged both worlds. And when the executives made the decision to stop working on OpenNMS, I'm the only one who talked to the developers and said, well, what do you like about working on OpenNMS and stuff? And, you know, these guys are sitting there saying, you know, hey, you know, I thought I was pretty clever and I came up with this little piece of code. And, you know, and some dude in Spain wrote me an email out of the blue and said, man, this is really cool. I really like this. This is good work. And that kind of job satisfaction, you can't buy that. I mean, it's again, being involved in a vibrant community is really cool. But it takes a lot of work, and it takes time to build it because it's trust based. But I think in any successful project, one of you guys was rebuilding a Myth TV box.
It depends on what time of the year you were talking about. I think we were all rebuilding.
Well, you guys were talking last week. I listened to last week's.
Then that would have to have been Pat or Alan. That was you,
probably,
wasn't it?
Me. That was me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And one thing I mean, Myth is great, and you use Myth Buntu, right?
Right now, Buntu.
Yeah.
I subscribed to the Myth mailing list, and man, did I get slammed! I mean, you want to talk about a
community? What was the question?
I mean, there was some.
What was the question? Let's hear it.
Oh no! It's just when you're talking about certain communities, it's like drinking from a fire hose. I mean, you get on the Myth list, and it was like 500 messages a day.
Oh,
and, it's active.
It really wasn't a question. It was just like, you know, here is a free product that obviously has, you know, the closer you get to something that consumers will use a lot of, you know, you get a lot more questions and a lot of stuff. So we're kind of weird in the fact that, you know, our product's pretty, it's marketed to a much smaller group of people. But, you know, you just can't beat it. What I like is I suck at coding. You really don't want me to do any kind of coding. But I'm a pretty damn good hacker, in the proper sense of the word. You know, you can give me a piece of code that kind of sort of does what I need it to do, and I figure it out. whether it's Python, PHP, Java, you know, I can go in and, you know, every language has an if statement. Every language has a while loop. Every language has a way to output things, and traditionally, what ended up happening, you know, I'm talking to these clients, and they're like, oh, we need to buy OpenView, or we need to buy Tivoli, because that's what our competitors are buying. And I'm like, look, if you're trying to differentiate yourself based upon what tools you can go out and buy, you might as well just pack it up, because someone's going to just come by and kick your butt, because what you really should differentiate yourself on is your customer service, your internal processes, not the tools. What do you bring to the table that the other guys don't? Like, one of our oldest customers is a company called Rackspace Managed Hosting. And if you have a server at Rackspace and you call them up, within three rings, someone answers the phone. And it's one of their processes. Now, she is going to be the most delightful person you've ever talked to, even if you're screaming at her mercilessly. And she will, in a short amount of time, get you to someone who knows what they're doing. But part of their process is, hey, the first step is you get to talk to a human. That human is going to sit there and tell you everything's going to be okay and be able to deliver on that promise. Now, suppose that, you know, you wanted to take a management tool that was off the shelf. They may say, oh, no, the first call has to go directly to a technical person. And so traditionally what you had to do was you had to change your processes to fit the tool. Now, with OpenNMS, I go in and I'm like, hey, we can mold OpenNMS any way you want it. You know, you want to come in and you think this thing should be blue and the rest of the world thinks it should be pink? Well, you know, you pay me to write this code, or you do it yourself, but I'll make sure there's an option that'll make it blue because that's what you paid for. And so so we're able to go in and really help people monitor their processes, their unique, their value-added processes that you just can't do with an off-the-shelf tool. And am I boring you guys? I'm sorry. I get in my own little world.
No. You know what? Our audience loves to hear this stuff when people go off and talk about all this. They eat this up, and it's actually not boring at all. It's very, very
okay. Good. I mean, I go to certain. Sometimes I'll go to presentations that only a network management geek like myself could enjoy, and so I live a pretty isolated life when it comes to. I mean, besides work, I live on a horse farm, and so pretty much I spend 12 hours at the office, and then a couple hours on the farm every day. So I don't get out much, but I do like to say that, you know, my day starts off by shoveling horse shit, and starting your day off by shoveling horse shit, it's very, very useful in the network management arena, because not only can I recognize horse shit, I know what to do with it.
Makes you perfectly ready for the corporate world.
Yeah. Well, I'm reading a book now called Life Incorporated. Have you guys heard about it? I live in Chatham County, North Carolina, and it's one third redneck, one third hippie, and one third Latino. And
yay!
Sounds
like South Columbus.
I love certain aspects about all three cultures. So one of my friends, a guy I was in business with for a while, he basically quit, and he now makes biodiesel, like hundreds of thousands of gallons of biodiesel every year. So he turned me on this book called Life Incorporated, and it's kind of how, you know, the corporatization of living in the world today. And, you know, I kind of run a corporation, you know, and I don't consider myself evil, so I kind of have a hard time when, you know, I know what people mean when they're basically saying, you know, dealing with corporations, but, you know, so, there's all these requirements, like the business plan. What's your business plan? And we go, spend less than you earn. Well, then they say, well, what's your mission statement? Because you got to have a mission statement, too.
Our mission statement is,
we got a good one. It's called Help Customers, Have Fun, Make Money. We have it written on a big board in the office. And it's basically, if you help your customers and you have fun doing it, the money will come.
Corporate America seems to forget that now. It's always about making the money and not about, you know, enjoying yourself doing what there's nothing wrong with making money, but you should enjoy yourself. And I think companies and people who go into something they enjoy, it just works better. You know what I mean? I know you do.
Yeah. No, it's like I'm unfit for almost any other job. So
it's Life Inc. The book is Life Inc. How the World Became a Corporation and How to Take It Back.
Yeah.
Is that the book?
That's it. I'm only like through chapter
by one. By Douglas Rushkoff.
Yeah.
Cool.
So,
Amazon bookstore.
Yeah, if you go and look up another book called Biodiesel Power, that's by my friend Lyle Estel. And what I love about that book is if you open it up, on the acknowledgments, he thanks his family, he thanks his two business partners, and then he thanks me, which is kind of cool. And then he thanks a whole bunch of other people. So I'm like, I'm the third person he thanks in this thing. And part of it was I introduced him to this idea of community and open source, and he took all of that and applied it to the biodiesel industry. And it's kind of funny because they it's a community-driven collection effort, it's a community-driven refinement effort, but his company makes its money in consulting people on how to build reactors, how to, you know, do a bunch of stuff. So they share a lot, but they also keep a little bit close to their chest, which is mainly their expertise. And he's been able to build a business based around that. And I think there's this this kind of movement toward, kind of taking stuff back. Smaller companies with people who really enjoy what they're doing, and because life's too short. It really is.
Yep.
I gave a talk at Scale. I did my first keynote on how to run an open source business, and I got this idea a while back. The Milton Bradley, or I think it's Milton Bradley, Game of Life. You ever play that as a kid?
Oh, my son actually loves it.
Yeah, well, what was so funny was one of my, I got a TRS-80 for Christmas in 1978, so it was my first computer.
Nice.
And
joy, yeah.
I programmed the Game of Life. And what was funny is, as I'm sitting there, I took the board out, and I said, I'm going to make the Game of Life, and I copied all the squares and stuff. And then I realized that it's pretty much, there's only like three places in the game where you make any kind of decision. And so basically what would happen is instead of playing the game, you would go and you would fill out you'd answer the three questions, and then it would just tell you if you won or not. But anyway, I used that as this platform for running an open source business. So you kind of start off with, you know, what kind of business do you want and all that other stuff. And the passion got to me. And at the end of this speech, you know, I'm sitting there and there's a couple hundred people in the room, and they're all excited, and they're all big open source fans. And I said, you know, I worked in corporate America. I started off at Northern Telecom, And, you know, this is kind of Dilbert land. I mean, he worked at Pacific Tel. It was very, very similar. And I saw these people, and they lived, there's a quote by Thoreau, and he goes, most men live lives of quiet desperation and go to the grave with a song still in them. And I was, that was just really sad to me, you know, that there's so many people here. I mean, I got kind of kicked into doing open source. It wasn't, you know, it was just an opportunity I saw and I took it. But, you know, so many people are like, well, I got to make the house payment, I got to make the car payment. And there's actually some backlash, because when I got called a communist on the OpenView forum list when I said I was going to go do open source, because they're like, oh, you want to just put us all out of business. And I'm like, what do you mean? It opens up new doors.
Did you put them out of business?
You know, I'm going to say, there you go. When you talk about network monitoring, though, that software is insanely expensive, and why anyone would spend money on it, you know.
Well, I'll tell you a story. I used to work, one of my consulting gigs was at a company called Cable and Wireless. This is when they were still in the U.S. And Cable and Wireless bought a bunch of Micromuse software. Micromuse did this product called NetCool. They were eventually bought by IBM. So they had this thing called NetCool. And Cable and Wireless spent $2.5 million on software licenses. That's not hardware. That's not consulting. That's software licenses. And part of that expense was they bought five of these things called object servers. Okay. Well, it turned out that when they started having problems, you know, bubble burst, you're talking about 2001, they're having financial difficulties, and they called up Micromuse and said, look, you know, we're only using two of these five object servers. When our maintenance comes up, can we just pay maintenance on just the two? And Micromuse said, no, we don't know you're just using two. We gave you license keys. If you want maintenance, you got to pay maintenance for all five. And I'm like, damn. I said, they spent $2.5 million with you guys. I mean, if you spend $2.5 million with me, we're getting hookers and beer. I mean, none of this, license issue. And what ended up happening? Cable and Wireless went away, and so went away their customer. I mean, if you're in a position where you're not going to look after your customers, you're not going to be in business very long. And we just figured there had to be a better way.
Well, they got what
they wanted. And that's the thing is, yeah, I don't think when you talk about that, when you take care of your customers, you know, you talk about, you know, it's not that customers want stuff for free. They just don't want to be, you know, taken advantage of. You know, when you know that you have a product and you figure, hey, we're the only one like this, so we can charge whatever we want. You know, that's just ridiculous. I hate it when companies do that.
Well, and this is one of the things that, I mean, not to sit here and bash all this VC stuff, but you know, with this current wave of these open core hybrid models where they sell software but call themselves open source, I mean, you run into a problem that, you know, VCs have this kind of 5-year window. And basically, you're supposed to be profitable in 5 years. And if you can't make those hockey stick numbers about year three or year four, you know, they're going to say, you got to go get revenue any way you can. And what you're going to do is you're going to put the screws to your customers. You know, we publish our prices online. If you go to openms.com, there's a pricing button. You click on the pricing button, there's all of our prices. Everyone pays the same. And to us, it's like, okay, you know, we're sitting here, and I tell them, I say, look, first of all, I'm a services company. If we're not a good fit, I don't want you for a client, because you're just going to be opening trouble tickets every single day trying to get it to do something it wasn't designed to do. So if I say that you should buy a support contract, it means I have a good feeling that I'm going to be able to meet all your needs. And the second thing I say is, look, you know, you don't have to, all the software's online. So you don't have to pay maintenance. We hope that you renew your support contract, but you don't have to pay maintenance, which always got me so mad because, okay, what's maintenance? Maintenance is usually something between 15 to 25% a year of the original purchase price. And why do you need maintenance? For bug fixes. Because if you don't have maintenance, you can't get bug fixes. So here's the logic. I'm going to sell you a piece of software that does X. But because of a bug, it doesn't do X. So if you wanted to do what I originally told you it would do in the first place, you got to pay me an extra 25% every year. And people buy this. You know, people think that this is the way things are, and I'm out there screaming, it doesn't have to be that way. Sorry. Been drinking a Kool-Aid.
That's crazy.
Well, that was just kind of just that phrase. I was talking to one guy, and I apologized. I said, I've been drinking the Kool-Aid, and he kind of pushed himself back from the desk, and he looked at me and said, dude, you've been making the Kool-Aid. So, but.
Man,
or you can make your own cola, too.
Yeah, I saw that.
Open cola.
Open cola. A friend of mine's doing it. You know, I saw it. I was in Singapore, and they had an Indian restaurant called Analakshmi, and it had no prices. So it really wasn't open source in the sense that they gave you the recipes and you made your own food, but what happened was you went in and you ate, and you paid whatever you felt like. And I was talking to the guy who took me there, and I said, you know, well, what do you usually pay? And he told me, and he said, yeah, I usually pay a little bit more than I would for the same meal somewhere else. And he felt good about it. You know, I listened to the podcast last week, and I can tell all of you guys are Apple fans. But you know, one thing that Apple brings to the table, yeah, I know. One thing that Apple brings to the table is they've created a culture where people feel good about paying for overpriced hardware. And you know, that's something that can't be ignored. Trying to make people get into a buying situation where they feel good about doing it. And we like to think, you know, that A, we're more affordably priced, but that we provide a particular service. Because if we don't provide a service, if we don't provide a value, you can still use the software. We had one hospital, a hospital called Carilion in Virginia, Roanoke, Virginia. And they had support for 2 years, and I called them. Their support was running out, and I called them up and said, hey, are you guys going to renew? And they said, no. I said, oh, I haven't seen any tickets. Are you having any problems? Did we not deliver? And he goes, no, it's running fine. We just haven't opened a ticket in a year, so we don't think we need support anymore. I mean, it's kind of a downside from a business aspect. I would have loved to have it, but it kind of speaks volumes for the software, you know.
That's kind of like, you know, I looked at anything it has a quote-unquote maintenance thing. Think about, like, cell phones. You usually replace your cell phone in 2 years or less because it's falling apart. It's built-in obsolescence. You know?
Yeah. Well, Europe tends to be pretty open to open source, but England isn't. For some reason in the UK, they're really kind of stuck. And I was dealing with this one very large communications company, and they basically said they replaced their network management solution, this, as they say, bespoke, custom-made network management solution, every 5 years, which is why we're really excited. We've got involved with this organization called the Telemanagement Forum. I'd be very surprised if any of you guys have ever heard of the TM Forum. But it's a group of the largest communications carriers on the planet. I mean, we're talking Vodafone, Orange, British Telecom, AT&T, et cetera. And for the last 3 years, we have been slowly but surely getting open source into this environment. And we came up with this program called the TM Forum Interface Program, or TIP. And basically, we're out building interfaces between all these management tools under the Apache license. So, I mean, very permissive open source license, and the idea is that if you're a vendor, that you can go out and use these interfaces, which means that your trouble ticketing system will talk to this guy's management system, which will talk to this other guy's inventory system. And so it provides this world of choice for the consumer. Now, of course, it's kind of tricky because if you're a software vendor, you kind of want to lock your people into your solution, but the consumers are screaming, we don't want this lock-in. And we're finally getting a lot of traction in this environment to where, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if in 3 to 4 years, you know, this little toehold that we have in open source is going to be big enough that most of the new products coming out will support it.
That's pretty sweet.
I mean, one of our guys in England, a guy named Craig Gallen, he just talked. He did a talk in Johannesburg 2 weeks ago, and then Dubai this week. So I went to Dubai. I went to Dubai in December. There was a company called Etisalat, which is the incumbent cell phone carrier in the United Arab Emirates, and they're testing out OpenNMS to see if it can manage their network. Trippy place.
So are you? So if you got like some vendors starting to buy into your product and throwing support in with their stuff, what about the other commercial big guys out there like HP's OpenView and everything? I mean, have they even noticed you, or is there any kind of relationship that you've tried to strike up with them?
I would say no, they haven't noticed us. It was kind of funny because. When I do trade shows, I try and see how companies are doing. You can tell by how much padding is in the show floor. If you've ever been a booth bunny at a trade show, it hurts. I mean, by the end of the day, you're sitting there basically standing on a slab of fabric over a piece of concrete, and your legs just get killed. So the more cushion you get, the better off things are, but it costs extra. Well, I wandered into the HP booth at NetWorld Interop last year. We were actually doing a test with OpenNMS on the NOC for the show. And so I walk in, and I'm sitting there like sinking up to my ankles in this padding. It was awesome. And I walked over to the little corner that they had dedicated for OpenView. And OpenView did a really, really good thing for my business. They like quintupled their prices. It used to be for like Network Node Manager was around $25,000, and now it's like $125,000 for the software. And so I walked up and I'm talking smack to the HP people, and I'm like, "Yeah," I said, "you know, thanks for raising your prices because it's driven a lot of people to my product." And they're like, "Yeah. Well, we're enterprise grade," and I said, "Yeah, so are we. We're monitoring 70,000 devices at this customer, you know, 120,000 interfaces at this other customer, blah blah blah." And the lady, you could tell the lady, like, she's like, "What was the name of that again?" And she like wrote it down and everything. But we actually integrate with OpenView. We wrote a little connector for one of our clients, so you can plug in. You can basically get information out of OpenView and use OpenNMS as sort of a manager piece for them. To me, it's. I'm really concerned more about convincing the clients. I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm a whore. I mean, when it comes down to it, I admit it. If you know, like MySQL, if Sun showed up and said, "Here's $1 billion for OpenNMS," as much as I love open source, my first question would be, "Where do I sign?" And my second question would be, "When you write out the check, do you actually have a 1 followed by 9 zeros, or do you use scientific notation to have like 1 × 10⁻⁹?" That's where I'd
yes.
be. now, so if
my favorite
on tomorrow, and good.
My favorite on network monitoring is where they want to charge you for the amount of devices you monitor. I'm like, what's the difference? Why does it actually cost more money to add in another device that you're monitoring? Because it's not like you're paying for the software again. You know.
I was talking with a
client
today, and they were real worried about stuff like that. And I said, first of all, we don't do no per node pricing. To me, I've had CIOs of big companies just laugh when they hear per node pricing. It's like, you know, it's like we're growing really fast, and you're adding a tax. Like every new device I buy, I have to pay the management tax, where I have to, you know, spend another $150. I mean, there was one server agent out there, an open source server agent, that the enterprise version was $500 per instance. I got servers. I didn't pay $500 for the hardware. You know,
yeah.
I'm like, I got to pay $500, and so that's there. And then the second thing, so when we sat down, we were like, okay, we don't have license keys, we don't have anything like that. How are we going to manage? And we said, okay, we're just going to limit the number of people who can open tickets. So like, if you get our standard support package, 3 people. The idea is first shift, second shift, third shift. 3 people can open tickets. And what we found is that in our larger clients, there's these silos. Like the internal IT guys may not want to talk to the external IT guys, who don't want to talk to the networking guys, who don't want to talk to the backup and storage guys. And so what ends up happening is that we get 4 support contracts. But the idea is, if you can run as many instances of OpenNMS as you want, as many nodes as you want. Because trust me, if you find a bug in one instance of OpenNMS, it's a good chance it affects all instances of OpenNMS. And for those, like you said, who have been paying per node and per instance, I mean, HP used to require that you buy an entire license and pay maintenance if you wanted to have a second copy in hot standby, just for failover. And for us, we're like, deploy as many. We hope that all of our clients deploy at least two instances of OpenNMS, our stable release in production and our development release, so we can get feedback onto what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong with the next release.
Damn, man. You know what? If you just get a little more greedy there, you could be making money hand over fist.
We're doing well. I mean, I don't want to, you know, it's like, it's frustrating, though, because, you know, I see these companies like Groundwork. I mean, Groundwork has burned through $32 million. That's a lot of money. And I'm like, what I could do right now with $2 million. I mean, if an angel showed up and said, look, I want to invest in your company. Here's $2 million. I mean, I would blow the market wide open. Because we're already there. We've got the scalability. The biggest thing holding us back, believe it or not, is a GUI. I mean, our web UI, the techies love it because it's very bare bones. It runs fine on your phone, but it's not fancy. You know, what's fancy is what's underneath the covers, and it's really hard to sell to upper management because they want the big, you know, JPL map thing. But, you know, outside of, because I, as a businessman, I was talking with Luke Canese. Luke Canese is the guy who does Puppet. And he just got some funding, and he's sitting there. He was on his blog contemplating, you know, what kind of model is he going to build his business? Like, is he going to have these proprietary extensions to Puppet? And, you know, so I kind of cautioned him against it. I said, look, you kind of really piss off your community when you have these enterprise extensions because you've drawn a line in the sand that says, okay, well, here's the features which you shall not pass. You know, these features you'll never get, you know, because they're enterprise features, they're proprietary features. And so I took the, you really can't have a nuanced discussion on the internet. So I started corresponding with him via email. And I said, you know, look, I could possibly imagine a situation where if it was handled incredibly well, you could have some commercial extensions to an open source project and really not piss anybody off. But I said it'd be incredibly difficult. And I can't bring that up on a public blog post because everyone will say, oh, now you're all for commercial extensions, which I'm not. And he wrote back, he says, well, if you were to say something like that publicly, I think that would make you appear a lot more pragmatic. And it really pissed me off. I'm like, pragmatic? I said, dude, I'm the fucking poster child for pragmatic. I run a business with no investment, no VC, and the only way that I can put food on my guys' tables is by making sure we spend less than we earn. You know, so every decision I make is a pragmatic one, and this is why we're doing so well, is that I'm not making any decisions that conflict with our open source credo, and that attracts the right kind of people, which allows my business to grow.
That's pretty tall order there, and very pragmatic.
Well,
and that is wow. Just think though, if somebody comes along and says they want to give you some money to help it grow even further.
Well, I mean, we're looking if we could find the right angel, because I don't want. You know, I see these companies that get like $10 million. I don't know what I could do with $10 million. I can't grow my company fast enough to really make use of that. I'm like, you know, why don't you give me $2 million and then I'll increase our revenues by 10 times in the next 2 years, and then we can go after more money if we need it. You know, but I can't. I mean, I've looked into the VC thing. I mean, I've been to Sand Hill Road. I've given presentations in front of people like, you know, Benchmark and Excel. And, you know, I met Peter Fenton. And Peter Fenton's a great guy, and he's made a buttload of money in this industry. But, you know, the way he does business is basically, you know, they're going to go out, they're going to pump a lot of money into a company, and they want to flip it. And, you know, right now, because I'm happy and I'm profitable, I can be picky. You know, I would love to be involved with a company. You know, one of my favorite companies, I don't know if you guys like them or not, but I really like Red Hat. I actually came up with this thing when I was struggling over how do you tell if you've got an open source project or not. And I came up with something I'll call the CentOS test. And I mean, if you can take the code, remove all the trademarked images, and create binaries that you can freely distribute that does all the functionality of the original product, it's open source. And so I really like their company philosophy. You know, to work within something like an IBM or an HP, I mean, it's doable. I mean, if the situation was right, if I was able to still, you know, promote open source within those organizations, et cetera, I would consider it. But, you know, at that point in time, you got to worry because, you know, how do you take a culture that's built on software licenses and change it, you know, into... And I can't get my sales guy to stop saying maintenance because we don't sell maintenance, we sell support. You know, there's no maintenance, it's free. You always get access to the code. It will always be, you know, my two rules with OpenNMS are that A, it'll never suck, and B, it'll always be free. And so that's one of the things I'm really trying to stick to. But, you know, what could I do if I actually had the resources of an IBM or an HP? I mean, I could take the what we do now and expand it to trouble ticketing. I could expand it to asset management. I could expand it to, you know, pretty much unlimited and take this whole, you know, operational support stack and make it open and make those interfaces open and free. And then anyone can play, you know. Maybe we can get some of the commercial guys in and play. Because I think with, you know, this is a true story. When I worked for a VAR that sold OpenView, I went to an HP sales training thing. You know, it was associated with the OpenView conference. And the guy came in and he said, for every dollar in software that you sell, for every dollar in software licenses that you sell, you can expect to make $8 in services revenue. And I had to think about that. I'm like, okay, for OpenNMS, first of all, keep your dollar. You know, we're not going to have any software licenses. Keep your dollar. And second of all, because we've built a tool that's very, very malleable, we can do it in half the time. So instead of costing you $8 to deploy, it costs you $4. And that, to me, was a compelling story. And so far, we've actually been able to realize this. We've been able to see people come in, and once they get into it, they don't want to go back. I mean, the idea that, hey, can we get it to do this? It's like, sure. You know, hey, can it monitor this new piece of equipment I have? I mean, we had this one customer come into us, and they were like, hey, we don't, you know, SNMP, the Simple Network Management Protocol, is kind of like the de facto management standard. And they were like, well, we don't want to go through instrumenting our system to support SNMP. It's a lot of overhead. What can we do? And we were like, well, it's Linux-based, right? And they said, yeah. I said, can you put Apache on your server? And they're like, yeah. I says, well, write all your stats out to a text file in the web root of your Apache server, and we'll write a collector that uses regular expressions to go load the page, scrape the values off of that, store it just like we would SNMP data. And so now I can go out and pretty much if the data exists on a website, I can collect it, threshold it, you know, create graphs, have historical data, and it didn't require SNMP. And, you know, The kind of things, I used to work for a company where we'd sit around a table and we'd try and guess what people wanted. And now, every day, people tell me what they want. And it makes, that's how OpenNMS, I mean, think about it, we're able to compete head-to-head with things like OpenView and Tivoli. If you go and search on OpenNMS and Tech Target, it may be on the .org site under awards too, but a couple years ago, TechTarget interviewed 1,500 people, had a survey, and said, what do you use for your network management platform? And IBM came in third, HP OpenView came in second, and we came in first. We got the gold award. And so how can, you know, a bunch of crazy guys out in North Carolina, you know, come up with a product that's free that can compete with these, you know, million-dollar software suites from big name vendors. It's the community. It's the fact that we don't try to force anything down the community's throat and say, this is how you should run your business. We say, how would you like to run your business? And we'll just enable that.
Yeah, it is a paradigm shift, because, you know, when you think about it, you always see commercials on TV for like Microsoft or Oracle, everything saying, you know, we're going to help you run your business. But in reality, in order to help you run your business, you have to weave your business around their products.
Yeah.
And you're saying, well, we want to help you run your business how you want to run it, and we will work with you to give you the product you want.
Yeah. I mean, one example with Rackspace. One of the things, and again, you know, I love Rackspace. I mean, I really like them. We have a server at Rackspace, and they have this internal system called Core. I mean, I knew Rackspace when it was 50 guys in the Broadway Bank building in San Antonio. Now they're a publicly traded company with like 2,500 people. What they used to do, they have a thing called Core. Core objects reused everywhere. It's their ERP system, if you will. Everything's tied into that. So you put in orders into Core, you do trouble ticketing into Core, you manage all the servers through Core. And so they needed a management solution, and you know, I said, hey, OpenMS will probably work. They were using it to manage their internal IT, and they said, well, what about managing the external IT? And I said, okay. And they were like, yeah, but you have all these events and messages. We use XML RPC. Can you do XML RPC? And we sat down and said, sure, give us a week. And we charge like 10 grand. We're not cheap. I mean, we do good work and we do fast work. And so, you know, we feel we can demand a high price. So it's $2,000 per man day of work. And so we said, give us a week, $10,000, and you'll have an XML RPC daemon. And it'll plug right into your existing infrastructure, and you can just run with it. And we did that. We did that in 2003. We implemented that feature. And the cool part is, because we are we're small, we can't afford to have huge amounts of testing. We rely a lot on the community for testing. But starting in 2003, we started using JUnit tests. So we actually build unit tests into our software. And so I installed this software in 2003. We didn't touch it for 5 years. And in 2008, they had me down in San Antonio to do an upgrade on all their systems. And so 5 years later, 36, I counted, it was 36 releases later, we actually, you know, upgraded them, not a single problem. Because we had built in these tests. And the reason we built in these tests is, you know, if you're managing a huge group of developers, you've got to have some sort of built-in testing system to make sure people don't screw stuff up. There's no way any one person can really know every single nuance of the code. And I was talking with a commercial, one of these open source vendors, and they had an open source piece, and I said, do you use any kind of testing? And they said, oh, we tried that, but that was too hard. And so here's an example where open source code is actually better developed than the commercial product. Because it has to be shared, and it has to encourage, you know, we're trying to encourage people to contribute, and you have to have these systems in place. Yeah, they're hard, but they pay off in the end.
So how was your salesperson when he first came on board? Because, you know, in the software industry, a lot of sales revolves around either selling licenses or selling a product as opposed to necessarily selling a service contract. Is that an adjustment for him?
He came to us from NetApp, and so he was used to selling, you know, hardware. But he had worked for other software companies before, and he knew us the beauty of being in an open source business is that I tend to hire from the community. I've hired a number of people directly out of the Order of the Green Polo, which is awesome, because when you hire them, they're efficient on day one. It's like I hire this guy and I say, okay, go close these bucks or go handle these support tickets, and I don't have to train them. You know, I don't have to spend 6 weeks, you know, trying to get them up on the software. So this guy, he didn't have any real, you know, hands-on OpenMS experience, but he did have really good people skills. And that's what we hired them for, because we'll get people. There's this company in Sri Lanka that has been trying to get us to do a demo for like 3 weeks, and we've just been slammed. And I haven't had a chance to do it. Well, with Brad on board, Brad's job is to, you know, to handle those people, make sure that they get the attention they need. To, you know, he may not know the nuances of every technical thing, but he can sit there and say, okay, what are your needs? What are you looking for? And then he can come to me, and it only takes 10 minutes of my time instead of 2 hours. And better yet, he also provides a neutral place where my clients can go. I mean, we have a relationship with a lot of our clients. Most of our clients have my home phone number, and they know that in an emergency they can call me at home. So if I, for whatever reason, if I'm not delivering, you know, if maybe I got busy and I took a ticket but didn't get around to answering it quickly enough, they can complain to Brad and say, look, you know, I don't want to knock Taurus's chops, but he dropped the ball on this ticket. And it gives them an outlet for, you know, interacting with us, that, you know, there's a buffer, so they don't have to deal with, you know, worrying about hurting my feelings, which is almost impossible because I'm like, look, I'm here to help you. But he's caught on really, really fast. But again, it was one of those things that I joke. I heard him on a call today talking about maintenance, and it's like, we don't sell maintenance, we sell support, because the software is free. But having a guy like that who can, you know, manage a CRM system and handle leads and get back to people in a timely manner and make sure that they get the attention they want is invaluable. It used to be me, and I could do it because we only got one trickle a week. And then it got to two trickles a week and then three trickles a week. And like I said, we probably had three today and five yesterday. You know, because like it or not, the network is becoming much more important. I used to tease, I used to use this company. There's a company in Apex, North Carolina called TipperTie. And what TipperTie does is they put the little clamps, the little metal clamps on the end of bulk sausage or ground beef. If you ever bought a tube of sausage, they make the machines that, you know, that wrap the sausage up. And the machines are like several $100,000, but they make their money on the clips. The clips are like, you know, I don't know, a micro cent a piece, but you sell thousands of them. Well, you know, they are like the last thing you'd think about when it comes to an internet company. But the problem is today people expect to be able to order stuff online. They expect to be able to track it. They expect to be able to correspond with you with email. I mean, the other day I had to fax something. And I have to go and borrow a fax machine because, I mean, I have a scanner, so I usually scan it in email, but I had to fax it. So you get a company like TipperTie out there, and, you know, someone's complaining because they called Betty up and they ordered, you know, 10 gross of number 12s and got 12 grosses of number 10s, and they just want what they expect from their other vendors, like an Amazon.com or an eBay or something like that. And so these companies are being dragged kicking and screaming into the internet age. And the question is going to be, you know, how, when the network means the difference between a sale and not having a sale, what we do, recession or not, becomes very important. And so that's why one of the reasons I think the phone's ringing off the hook is, first of all, we've gotten to the point where our product does act as a replacement for these other expensive tools. And second of all, the need is still there. You got to have the need, and we definitely see the need and can address it.
That is some great stuff. And man.
Well, I'm known as I have a blog. It's called Adventures in OSS, Adventures in Open Source Software, adventuresinoss.com. And I'm known as the mouth of OpenNMS. So it's kind of, I'll talk to you. I mean, you guys, I can talk to you for the next 7 hours if you want, but but I really,
that's awfully nice of you to offer.
Well, we make the joke, the line from The Matrix, it's one thing to know the path and it's another thing to walk the path. And, you know, one of my goals in life is to tell people that forget all this naysaying that you hear that you can't make money in open source software. I mean, sure, if you're focusing on just like, well, how do you sell free software? The answer is you don't. You sell something else. And there's so many complex problems out there dealing with databases and ERP systems and network management that the traditional way of doing things just doesn't stand up anymore. And so I'm like, you know, if there's something you really love doing, go out and do it. And open source definitely provides that avenue.
Sweet, that is. Do you monitor your website with OpenNMS?
Yeah, we do actually. Okay. It's kind of funny, but like we switched to we had a real big problem with this sales guy at WebEx. And so we switched from WebEx. Once our contract was up, we left WebEx and went to GoToMeeting. And I like GoToMeeting, except there's not a Linux client, which kind of sucks. And so we may actually switch back to WebEx. But so we were getting ready. We've done this new Jasper Reports integration. So you get these really pretty reports in OpenNMS now. And the guy who wrote it is one of our guys up in Massachusetts. And we sat down and said, okay, let's do a GoToMeeting and do this. And we couldn't get authenticated. And so I said, what's wrong? So I poked around, and I found there's a page called status.gotomeeting.com, and it actually tells you what the status is. And I went there and says, we're having latency issues. Just keep trying, and you'll eventually get in. So being the geek I am, the first thing I did was I sat down and wrote a monitor to monitor GoToMeeting. So it basically goes to that. We have this thing called the page sequence monitor, which basically you can go to a page, you can use regular expressions to see if there's a success match or a failure match. And I basically went in and said, oh, you know, all services are operating normally. Look for that string. If that string's not there, then mark the services down. And so now it's like probably about once a week I get a notice that the GoToMeeting service is down. And this was strictly through configuration. I didn't even have to write, you know, I just had to edit one file, and it was good to go. So yeah, we use OpenNMS to monitor our machines. We use OpenNMS to monitor our customer machines. We're having issues with the air conditioner in our server room. So I have OpenNMS monitoring the temperature sensor in the APC UPS. And if it gets above a certain thing, it sends emails out to me and the landlord. I've got the landlord on set up in our system so that he can see that particular report. And I monitor the stock exchange. I actually monitor my eBay auctions. I write this little thing where I can go in and configure an eBay auction, and then I set it up for a threshold of 1 cent. And we have different types of thresholds, and one of them is the absolute threshold. And it's like, if it goes up by 1 cent or more, you know, let me know. And so I get emails or SMSs, depending on which auction I'm interested in, that tells me when anyone bids on something I'm selling. And the reason we're able to do this is we build a tool, not an application. So, you can go in and use it as an application. Out of the box, it does a lot of basic monitoring, but it's like, hey, I need to monitor this thing, I need to monitor that thing. And usually you have about two or three different ways to do it. And it's that flexibility coupled with the power of the tool that makes it real attractive.
Well, it's good to hear that you're eating your own... I lost the analogy there.
I'm not just a president, I'm a member kind of thing.
I'm not just a president.
We use it for that's our beta testing too. I run the snap. We have a snapshot release that gets done every night, and so I try to. That's one way that I find bugs is use the tool. And so the fact that you know the core developers for the project tend to be one office over. Whenever I find a bug, I can usually walk in and say, "Hey, go to Bar Brady." We named all of our servers after South Park characters. And so I said, go to Bar Brady and go to this page. You'll see this exception. Make it go away. So, but we're doing one of our guys, a guy named Jeff Gelbach, he actually went to school with Mark Spencer. And so in our next release, we actually have an Asterisk integration. So OpenNMS will actually phone you via Asterisk and use Festival to speak the notice. So actually call you and say, hey, no www.openms.org is experiencing problems. Please log in, blah, blah, blah. So the fact that we don't have to go and reinvent the wheel every time gives us a lot of great opportunities to improve the product.
Nice. Taurus, we want to thank you for coming on the show this week. We
no problem.
Appreciate the work you're doing, and it's exciting, and I wish you all the best with going forward, and anytime you want to come back on the show, you're more than welcome.
Who's all going to self? Are you guys going to self?
I'm not.
I plan to.
Who's not going, I think, is the question. I think that the only one not going would be Joel. I do believe we're all going.
Yeah.
Are you going, Joel?
Yeah,
no?
We're all going.
You can
nah, I
self.
Can't.
We're
a way to get there.
So please, we'll definitely be there. So let's throw down a few beers when you guys show up in Spartanburg.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll take this. I'll talk you off even more in person.
Sweet, I look forward to it. Yes, yeah, so we'll see you at South.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. We're gonna move on to some other topics quickly. You're more than welcome to stay on and chime in. I know Pat's been chomping.
Well, my wife just came home and glared at me, so I need to go and eat some dinner. So,
all right, well,
but
thank
I do appreciate
you.
It.
I get that every week.
I'm going to be spending about 2 hours of my week now listening to you guys, so I'll see you in the tubes.
Awesome. Thank you.
Take care.
We will see you
take
shortly.
Care.
Thank
Have
you.
A great one.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Good news, gentlemen. Before you get on to the other topics, just to let you know that my fourth entry in the Urban Dictionary has been approved. Geo-shitting is now
oh, what is it?
In the Urban Dictionary.
Geo-shitting.
So, rejoice.
Yay, Dad.
Earlier today, Lemon Tuna Mouth was approved.
Lemon Tuna Mouth.
Yeah. So, that makes four entries into
these should all go on your Wikipedia page.
Yeah, why not?
They should.
Yep. How's it going, 330?
It's going well. How's it going with you, Joel?
Just nursing my stupid tooth here. Vicodin is awesome.
The tooth. Remember
so
the tooth.
Oh. So Ubuntu's going to be less brown.
Yep. They've got
like
rid of the
brown
shit brown for the next release. It's actually kind of a purplish with a dark theme kind of look to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I was looking at it right now. That's nice.
Yeah.
Hey, it looks good.
The brown is getting old, you know?
Shit brown.
The CD that they're sending out looks pretty snazzy. I gotta upgrade.
Yeah.
I just think their new font looks dumb. With the sharp edges on it.
It looks a little bit like the Pepsi logo. Tiny bit.
Isn't there a Ubuntu Cola? Cola in South Africa or Africa somewhere?
Loco.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Ubuntu Cola? Cola or Loco?
Cola. Cola. You know, like the soda.
Ubuntu Cola. Swap your regular cola for delicious refreshment.
Is that in Africa or like South America somewhere? I forget. I remember going back like maybe a couple of years ago. People were talking about
Ubuntu Cola is a soft drink certified by the Fair Trade Foundation. Made with fair trade sugar from Malawi and Zambia.
Okay, so it's African then.
It's the first UK cola
well,
to be...
Well, the sugar is.
Fair Trade certified, so it's
sure.
United Kingdom cola. It's available sale in the United Kingdom, Sweden, Norway, Ireland, Belgium, France, Italy, and online.
Yeah, all those countries are in Africa. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just playing up the stupid American that doesn't know geography.
Yeah, I think they're all in the southwestern part of Africa, except for the United Kingdom, which is that little island that's off the southwestern tip of Africa.
That's right.
So that's
That one. And then the next news is that Novell is up for sale, man. Who would have thunk it?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, the writer's been on the wall.
I knew they had an offer.
Who's buying them?
some group called Elliott Associates.
Oh. Holding company. Then which means nothing's going to change.
Ugh. Yeah, they'll pull it apart. They'll fire some people. They'll lay people off.
I wonder what that's going to do for, like, Linux and all the open source stuff that they have going on over at Novell.
I don't know, but I know their old NetWare stuff is, you know, we're starting to get rid of it, and we've been on NetWare for, like, ever. I mean, like, since,
what are you getting rid of it for?
God, version 3. Microsoft Active Directory.
Oh, come on, man.
Yeah, I know. Hey, well, it's not my choice. I don't have a choice. That's not my area. So, and we're starting to deploy Windows 7 already in places. A lot of the IT already has Windows 7 installed. I don't.
So here's the question about the Novell thing. Who's going to go bankrupt first, SCO or Novell? Because SCO just got a whole bunch of money to continue fighting their bullshit legal battle.
SCO. No question, SCO.
The numbers are talking about this Elliott Associates is in the vicinity of $1.8 billion, so that's a lot of money. So I don't think they're going to run out of cash with $1.8 billion. Not for a while. Yeah, I just posted an article.
What was it?
It's actually a blog posting from Matt Assay.
About the Novell stuff?
Yeah, the Novell stuff, yeah.
Huh.
How funny would it be if Microsoft buys them?
Ugh. Microsoft, are they in a position to buy anybody right now? I mean...
Dude, they got their... They have such a huge war chest, it's not even funny.
But what are they going to buy if they bought Novell? What would they be buying that they don't already have?
Their Linux
That wouldn't make sense. Yeah, they'd buy it and then they'd kill it.
Enterprise Linux.
Yeah, they have their customers and some of them want to buy Enterprise Linux. Now they have a product line that they can offer. It's not out of the realm of impossibility, man.
Actually, I'd probably look more for IBM to buy it, because IBM pushes SLES for the Power P series, and they're still selling. They're still selling the heck out of P series boxes. So, although we're not buying a new one this year, we were going to get a replace our 590 with the probably a 570 with the Power 7 chips, but we decided we're just going to lease it for two more years because we want to move it off site, so we want to have a part of our system off site so we can do fallovers. So didn't want to do it this year anyway.
The writing's been on the wall for a while, man, with this whole Novell thing. I don't know if you guys have been following, but a lot of the well-known employees there, they've been leaving in mass for like the last couple months. You know, Matt Friedman was one. There's been a bunch of other people too. So you know, a lot of times when someone's about to get, when a place is about to get bought out, man, that's what happens. Like, you know, medium to higher ups, you know, they're out the door. They leave. Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and then eventually people get fired, usually too.
Yep.
So it could get ugly, you know, depending on how it goes.
Anyway.
That's that story. The really big story is Apple suing HTC, citing 20 alleged patent violations from the iPhone. They claim that HTC is violating them.
It's about time they got nailed to the wall for their stealing, ripping off Apple. Can't they innovate
on that? Gadget had a pretty good breakdown. I'll post the URL in the IRC channel here. And we can go over these alleged patents, what they are. Here's one. Time-based non-constant translation of user interface objects between states.
Huh? Seriously, huh?
Here's another one. Touchscreen device method and graphical user interface for determining commands by applying heuristics. So, if it's
methinks Microsoft had
and a GUI interface, Apple owns this.
Right.
This next one is my favorite. Listen to this one. Unlocking a device by performing gestures on an unlock image. So basically, if you have an icon that says unlock, you have to pay Apple money now.
No. You have to have a gesture too.
Well, I got a gesture for you.
Stupid.
Yeah. I think we all have a couple of gestures.
Middle finger.
I have my hand in the shape of a fist, and I'm cranking it. My middle finger's coming up.
If that would unlock a phone.
Here's another one. List scrolling and document translation, scaling and rotation on a touchscreen display.
Fire it up, Ray.
So if you move, they have patents on using touchscreens.
Yeah, moving your finger up and down. How about this one? This next one's a doozy. System and method for managing power conditions within a digital camera device. So let me ask you. So for every digital camera,
they
pay licensing to Apple for the power saving.
Right. I mean every digital camera, because almost every digital camera has something like that.
Here, automated response to and sensing of user activity in portable devices.
Yeah.
How about this one? Object-oriented graphic system. So if you're running an object-oriented language on your device, you owe Apple money now.
Which is like, what? If you got a KDE-based laptop?
here's a quote from Dave Weiner. To Apple, a perfect world is one where every moment a user is reading, listening, or watching causes cash to flow back to Apple.
Yeah.
Just looking at the list of them on that article. It sounds like most of this stuff is like software related, okay? Which is kind of odd because HTC is a hardware manufacturer. So if they're going after Google, they're firing it across
the Android crowd. I think they're doing this.
They're doing this, you know, because they don't want Android adoption. They don't want competition.
Well,
they want a fucking monopoly.
They've got real competition now, so that's why they're actually going after these things now.
Hey, you guys got to remember, Apple didn't jump into the search engine market. Google came across to the phone market, and they're going to pay to play, baby. It's not right.
What Steve Jobs says.
So when did Apple get into the phone business? 2007?
There wasn't a phone business before Apple got into it. They invented the phone business.
You're right, and they invented touchscreens, and smartphones, and cell phones.
Method and apparatus for distributing events in operating system. Right. Sure.
Here's one for you. Real-time signal processing system to serial transmitted data. So, a real-time signal processing system. So, I don't know, maybe something like an air traffic control system, maybe?
So, I wondered, did Apple actually innovate these things, come up with these things, or was it, did they...
No, they just filed them. That's what they did. They got the lawyers. They went to the patent office and they filed them.
Yeah.
This just shows you the patent office is seriously screwed. They have no friggin' idea.
The software patent system is fucked in this country, man. It is so fucking outdated and, you know, antiquated. It needs to be freaking just gutted, you know? It's pathetic.
Well, Sam, the people in the patent office have no idea what's going on. They're just
patenting. Of course they don't know.
They're like, that shit sounds amazing. Let's give them a patent for it.
you think the judge is going to know what the fuck they're talking about, you know?
Hell no.
When they get to go to court?
Nope.
Especially if they file it down in North Texas there.
Yeah, I think they filed in Delaware. Delaware, I think, was where they did it.
Yay.
But what's even more disturbing is supposedly they're pushing for the ITC to issue an injunction to keep HTC from importing the phones into the United States. And I'm gonna post a second posting from Ars Technica, which talks about the patent claims that they listed with the ITC. And these are pretty vague too. Message protocol for controlling a user interface from an inactive application program.
That's called a button. Taskbar button.
Object-oriented operating system. Object-oriented multitasking system.
System and method for performing an action on a structure in computer-generated data. Sounds like a database.
Encapsulated network entity reference of a network component system. Sounds like TCP/IP.
It's interesting how these things. I mean, you got to figure. Before the iPhone, there was the Palm devices. They all had touch interfaces and different things. I mean, how much? And the research and design.
Tons of prior art.
Yeah. How much research and design went into these devices? Went long into it before the devices actually appeared on the market. So, I mean, how many people were working on similar devices as to, like, what the iPhone was doing, and Apple just happens to come first to market with it on a regular basis? I mean, or
Nokia is in the process of suing Apple. You know that? Nokia sued Apple last year. The case is still pending. And then Apple countersued them.
Yep.
Just, man, just freaking make your product and sell it, and the people will buy it if it's a better product than everybody else's.
Yeah, no kidding.
Trying to block somebody from the market. I mean, if they came out and said, you know, if Google came out and slapped their operating system on top of an identical Apple hardware, then I could see why they would be pissed off. But you know what? Just take your crap and sell it to the people who want to buy it, and stop fighting with each other.
The whole point of a patent system is to protect people that come up with innovative stuff for a set amount of time. Okay, but what's happening with server patents is it's doing the complete opposite. Okay, it's creating monopolies. Okay, where it's stifling innovation. You know, if we have a free and open market, okay, that everybody's competing on level ground. Okay. New stuff comes out quickly. The market is progressing at such a high pace. You know, things are advancing at such a high rate. You know, it's beyond what the original patent system people envisioned. You know, they were probably thinking about fucking steam engines. You know.
Yep. Well, then my favorite are the ones like this is an old one, but the Amazon OneClick patent. Remember that one?
Yeah.
That's crap.
OneClick to order something.
Crap.
I know.
A click. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yep. OneClick and you order something from Amazon. You know, I'm like, you know, oh, hey, that's what, a user account and a stored credit card number? You know? Not rocket science, folks. Not innovation.
Yeah. Like a screen flipping. I remember back in the 1990s, they had CRT screens that flipped when you turned them. It would be on this like little mount and you would turn them.
Right, right. Radius.
Exactly, radius. There's tons of prior art, you know. I'm sure the legal team, you know, we'll go through it, you know, piece by piece and just fucking blow them out of the water. You know, all I have to say is fuck you, Steve Jobs. Fuck you, Apple. I just went and I bought an HTC Nexus One. Suck on that.
There you go.
Yeah, better buy them before they're no longer available in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Linus likes it, so, you know, it must be good.
Well, you know, if you can't compete fairly, do what you can to. And Apple would see it the other way. They're like, why should we allow you guys to steal our technology that we invested our money in and time? I don't know. They always talk about innovation, but is it innovation or is it just natural evolution? Is evolution innovative? It's a good question. Question that maybe only Dave Yates could answer, but he ain't here anymore.
He disappeared, man.
Yeah, where the hell did Dave go?
He said hello and he left, you know. You know, I clicked on the Nexus One ad from his website, so... You better let us know how much he's getting from that.
$0.25.
You ordered it today?
Yeah, during the show, nice. Actually.
He'll have it Friday.
It says overnight.
For sure. But yep.
Probably by Friday.
Yeah, it's awfully late, though. Yeah.
It's late. Yeah. But
we received an email about this. This past week from, Matthew Stahl, and I see there's an article about it on LXer tonight, regarding the, a driver's license for the internet.
Link must be happy.
Oh, yeah.
Where, I mean, in a nutshell, one of the higher ups at Microsoft, what's his name right here, Robert McMillan. Oh, I'm sorry. This is the article by Robert McMillan in Computer World, Microsoft's VP for Trustworthy Computing, Scott Charney. No, Charney. I'm sorry. Scott Charney, I guess. And a few other people at Microsoft have been promoting the idea of putting some kind of driver's license or a tax on the internet to prevent people from... using the internet maliciously. One of the points that they had said that the internet's like the Wild West out there today, and you know, you're subject to the
wild west.
Yeah, anybody, you know, be it with good intentions or bad intentions, and there's just no regulation going on. And one of the points they bring up to counteract the idea that, well, the founders of the internet were always envisioned a free environment of exchanging data and anonymity and being, you know, kind of like free press, freedom. And they said, you know, one of the things that idea was espoused when the internet was a couple of people who knew each other, connected together in this day and age, still it doesn't fly. And they want to find methods to impose some kind of regulation and restrictions and some kind of licensing to identify people on the web so that if you're doing something or trying to get somebody to do it, they know who it is that they're doing it with. And, of course, they want to get countries, governments, and ISPs to buy into this, and, you know, they want to put it on their service to control, or, you know, they're talking about specifically controlling Microsoft, but I think you let something like this, you open the door to something like this, particularly from a company like Microsoft, and there's no doubt in my mind that they are going to use this technology to lock out everybody else. Well,
yep. Let's say, Dan, and it totally works until someone, you know, until someone figures out how to, say, take your online identity, do a bunch of bad stuff as you, and then you can't get online anymore.
Well, you know, and I think it even comes before that. It's just like DRM and any of those other restrictive technologies that, quite honestly, it doesn't work against the people who it should work against. It just works against everybody else. Those people who are going to do exactly what you fear, you know, in DRM terms and movies and audio, it's the mass production, the mass pirating of movies and sale on the black market. It doesn't prevent them from doing that. It prevents, you know, Joe Schmo from listening to his music in a perfectly acceptable way on any device he wants to use it on. It prevents them from doing that. It prevents people from watching Linux, watching DVDs under Linux, because you can't get a license to do it legally most of the time. You know, all this is going to do is lock up legitimate users. It's going to lock out legitimate users, and the people who they're trying to protect against are still going to do the shit that they're going to do.
Preach it, Brother Dan.
You're damn right.
It's like what Cory Doctorow said.
Amen.
DRM only keeps honest users honest. It's like trying to keep tall users tall.
Right. And it pisses off everybody else. You know, when we were talking back and forth with between us about this, I mean, the more I think about it, you know, they're complaining about people don't understand technology. They don't, you know, they're afraid of technology. They don't know how to use it. And subsequently, you know, because they're given this powerful system that the door is wide open, they can do whatever they want. You know, now we got systems that are infected with botnets, and it's just people's identities being stolen, and it's because people are, by and large, ignorant. They place the blame on the user, and to some extent, I agree with that. You know, there is some onus upon the user of this technology to understand it better and not leave the door open. But on the flip side, you know, the door that they're using most of the time is Windows, and that's just god awful. But all that aside, perhaps people, and I think we've talked about this in the past too, a computer as it stands today isn't what people want or need. It's too much. You know, we see Android coming out. Was that Google's Chrome OS? Maybe that's what people need.
Something simple.
Basic,
stripped down. You want an appliance? We'll give them an appliance.
I don't want that. But then
me
again,
do I?
You know,
but we're not normal
people.
We aren't
the people that are being affected so much by these problems that they directly affected. We are on the periphery of being affected, because we have to deal with the cleanup
exactly.
of this, the wasted bandwidth, the annoyance of it, but we are not directly affected. But yet at the same time, when you impose that kind of licensing and restrictions, then we can become directly affected, even though we're not culprits in this at all.
Well, we aren't. You are. We know what you do.
Yeah, well, because I want to go off and do illegal things on the internet, you're going to penalize everybody else.
And post where he poops.
Yeah. Right. Like, that's like if I go out and steal a Red Hot Mama at a 7-Eleven, and that every time any one of you guys go into 7-Eleven, you have to have an adult chaperone you around the store. I mean, come on. Meanwhile, the adult I get is my next door neighbor who I stole the Red Hot Mama for, you know? Kind of in a driver's license are you going to impose in China? Like, they're going to follow that. Damn.
Oh, they will. They'll just give everyone one.
Yeah, what's the point? I mean, anything like that you come up with is going to be circumvented and is going to be rendered obsolete within, what, a day or 2 days?
Probably.
Don't get me started.
Not to mention the fact it'll probably require you to use a Microsoft operating system.
Well, yeah, that just brings you all
or
back
that.
To the, you know, you call up your ISP and say, I'm having trouble getting on the internet. Well, why? I'm using, well, open up Internet Explorer. I'm not using Internet Explorer. I use Run Linux. Well, there's your problem right there. You know, you don't have a driver's license because you're using Linux. We can't let you on the network. Get out of here.
Just yep. lie to them. Just go.
Hey guys.
Okay. I opened Internet Explorer.
Good night, everybody.
How's it going, Al?
Hey, Alan.
But when you need that driver's license, how are you going to get one? The internet license.
Call up your ISP.
Gonna print one off.
No, the SEC will pay it. No, and you'll have a required email address. Your email address will have to be something like k43221@sec.gov.
You know what? Here's your internet driver's license. Give everybody IP version 6 and they know wherever you are. No yep. more dynamic IP address, static IP for everybody. But even then, you could just...
Like a social security
spoof
number.
Spoof it. Yeah, you could change yeah. it.
Yep.
Doesn't work.
My favorite is when people do documentation of the MAC address on a server. Which I think
what?
Is totally... The MAC address. Totally and stupid and pointless. I can check the MAC address in 5 seconds. So, why are you recording it? Who cares?
Alright, anything else, gentlemen? Enough of this ranting.
I think we're going to...
Rant.
I want to talk a little about TiVo. They announced their new version, and you'll love this. And it's mostly uses Flash for the interfaces.
Really?
Yay!
Wow! Really?
Actually, I got a funny one here.
What did that? Does it run dog slow now?
I don't know. Well, they upped the hardware.
Yeah, they better have.
Series 4. I put a link in from Ars Technica.
I heard that it doesn't have Wi-Fi.
$500.
Like, you can do all this internet crap, but it doesn't have Wi-Fi.
Lord only knows. I'm trying to find a picture of it. Did somebody actually brought... There you go. The iMaxi. It's a case for the iPad that looks like a maxi pad.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
That's funny.
I'm posting those links from the internet.
Geek Sugar.
Email. Oh, is there... Does TiVo have Netflix streaming yet?
No.
On this version, yes, I think.
Huh.
Oh, okay.
If you look at that article. Apparently it does.
Interesting. TiVo runs Linux based on Flash, and they have Netflix streaming.
Well, they license it with Netflix. They probably paid an amount of money.
Do we care about... Do we care that...
Go
I was going to say, do we care that Walmart bought Vudu?
Yeah, Vudu is a video streaming service, HD. I don't know, man.
Yep, the box.
They probably won't do anything with it.
Vudu?
Probably right. Yes.
Walmart doesn't know Vudu. How to freaking run that type of thing.
I never heard of Vudu before.
It's a set-top box, essentially. I'm guessing it probably runs Linux. And they actually had porn, too.
HD?
Seriously. Here, I'll paste it in the IRC. Vudu, V-U-D-U. So, I got a DRM rant, a short one. For those of you who have the Sansa disc players and you're contemplating getting a slot radio card, don't bother.
Why?
I got the review one. Well, I got the review one, and essentially what it is, Slot Radio Plus is what I reviewed. There's 1,000 tracks delivered to you on a card, okay? Well, the thing is, you can only use it on a Sansa player or certain Verizon Blackberries, and that's it. You cannot copy the music off of it. You cannot listen to the music via your desktop. That's it's completely locked down. It's totally useless unless you're using Sansa, a Sansa MP3 player, or a BlackBerry from Verizon.
Wasn't Link raving about
that? And it's
that?
Stupid, too. Now, he might have been on slot music. There's a couple things. They actually have one that actually is un-DRM'd MP3s. But this is actually acts more like a radio station. Once you start listening to a playlist, you can only skip forward. You cannot skip backward. As if this not being able to use it on anything else wasn't enough. You know, the implementation of it is just horrid. I mean, I don't know what they have a great idea. Selling preloaded music on a memory card is a genius idea, but with all the lockdown they have on it, it's not worth it. It's better to just go to Amazon MP3 and buy it there. So
now, you say you can't go backwards on it. Once you listen to it, can you go back and listen to it again?
Yeah, if you press the skip ahead button 999 times.
No, I mean, once you go through the whole card, you don't just get one.
Yes,
listen.
You can re-listen to it.
You can listen to
you
it.
You can re-listen.
You want, but you just can't go.
Right. Right, and you're stuck with whatever order that they gave you. You can't make your own playlist off of it. It's kind of dumb. I mounted the card on Linux just to see if I could actually see the music. You can't even see the partition. It just thinks it's a 4-gig card, which that's the amount of free space that they give you on Slot Radio Plus. So
I wonder what kind of file system it uses then.
It probably has some kind of proprietary wrapper around it that obscures it.
It's probably encrypted.
I've seen that on certain cameras sometimes.
I've seen it on, like, thumb drives. And I don't mean, like, the U3 crap. Because you can remove U3. If you have Windows that I know of. If you have a U3 drive, you can't remove it on Linux just yet, I don't think. So, I usually just fire up a Windows machine and remove U3 off the flash drive. But, I mean, I like Sansa's players, don't get me wrong. I love the fuse. The clip is really awesome, you know, and it's just that, you know, they're not, you know, they're a company too. They make bad decisions too, and I think slot radio is a bad decision. Now, slot music is not a bad idea, actually. Slot music's pretty cool. It's MP3 and it'll work on anything. I think that's what they call it, slot music, or
something like that.
Let me see. Yeah.
Bum, 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 bum. Slot radio. No
yep.
Good.
At least the one thing they did get right is they did get some of the music right. In the 80s and 90s mix, the first song they play was Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds from The Breakfast Club. That's a good song. So, the music was good on it. That's about it.
All right.
DRM sucks. Software patents suck.
Yeah.
Active Directory.
Preaching to the choir, we are.
Flash sucks.
Yeah.
Flash sucks, yep.
No Netflix.
E3 stuff.
Client for Linux sucks.
iPad sucks. And we don't even know anything about that.
HTC doesn't suck. Link's dead, and Internet driver's license sucks. Alright, I guess we better wrap this crap up. I gotta get this.
Internet driver's license doesn't stop people from doing stupid stuff. Just look at people driving. in the snow.
Exactly.
That's all I had to say about that.
Well, all right, I got a song this week called Where Is Susan from Toby Andiff. It's off the album Where Is Susan. Tremendo. You'll probably hate it, don't we all? Hate everything. Next week...
Everything Dan picks.
Next week is what?
Is it just us?
Next week. Is it just us next week? I thought we had a guest next week.
I think we got Kristen Lenart.
Yeah, Kristen Lenart from Demo Recorder. We had him on before, didn't we?
A long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, all right, cool. And then after that, so far, it's ramping up to be just us.
Yeah, we don't have anybody lined up, so we need to get a couple episodes of just us ranting and raving.
It'd be a good thing just to get our minds off of, you know, freed up of crap, to have a good just us show.
So you heard it from Joel here first. We got a just us show full of crap coming soon.
Good crap.
Yeah. Alright. I'm going to play this if you want to hear it. I'm going to unmute it right now. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back next week. This is show
44.
I said
Alan's already gone.
Yeah, he dropped out.
It's got to be it's either 344 or 345. What show
is
it?
344.
If we have time next week, Pat will share his experience on the Nexus One.
Oh, I can't wait to get it, man. That's a freaking awesome.
I'm sure you can.
I played around with the My Touch. I was talking in the RC chat room. What I did was our listener Ryan, he sent me a brick G1, and it wasn't a software brick. It was a hardcore hardware brick. So I couldn't get it going. I would have had to replace the motherboard on it. So I saw some guy on Craigslist down by the Jersey Shore who was looking for a white G1 to trade. So I basically traded the white G1 plus some cash for my Touch 3G. And I sold it on eBay tonight. So that money is going towards funding my Nexus. And I'm also going to sell my G1 sometime next week, too. So.
Sweet. This is actually episode 343. Sorry.
343, there you go.
Were you going to say something?
I'm done.
Hey, 330 was on 10 episodes ago, wasn't he? On 330.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alright, this is it. I'm playing the song. I'll talk to you next week. Have a
99.
Good
one.
Have a good one. Take care.
This is what we're sure of. This is
join us for the 2010 Southeast Linux Fest as we once again celebrate Linux and open source software in the GNU/South. Due to the overwhelming response last year, this year's event will be bigger, better, and longer. SELF 2010 will take place Friday, June 11th through Sunday, June 13th at the Spartanburg Marriott at Renaissance Park in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Be there for UbuCon, Fedora Activity Day, BSDA certification, Drupal Camp, multiple parties featuring DualCore as well as the guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000 as Rift Tracks, and an even more expansive group of superb speakers, sponsors, and exhibitors. SELF is free to attend, but hurry and register today to lock in the special discount room rate at the hotel. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
Search of computers.
Can we talk about multiprocessing?
Can we talk about Beowulf clusters?
Can we talk about Web 2.0?
Just talk geek to me.
Hey, it's Deep Geek. Please come check out my podcast for my take on all things geeky. You can find us at www.talkgeektome.us. That's www.talkgeektome.us. Thank you.
Just talk geek to me.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? With my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Daddy has a gun!
Yeah.
Pow.
Pow.
Cool.
I got that money pretty quick, man, from the auction.
That's good. I like them when they do that.
It got into PayPal pretty quick, and what's even better is she's in Pennsylvania. I had a flat $10 shipping rate.
Yay. Bastard.
Let me see if Google Checkout has me a delivery date. Let's see. No, nothing yet. I probably won't see nothing until tomorrow.
Which means you'll get it Friday.
Yeah, I'm fucking psyched, man. It looks like a fucking awesome phone.
He's gonna spooge all over his one.
Oh, I got my 16 gig card ready to go in there.
Yeah, don't fool yourself. You're gonna have it hacked within a week.
No. I'm gonna.
Come on.
I tell you what, though, man, the MyTouch 3G is actually a pretty nice phone. It's light. It's got the display is the same as the G1, but the battery.
I tried
life,
it. It looks like it was thin.
Battery life.
Real
is
thin.
On it. It's really thin.
Yeah.
It's a nice phone. Nice phone. You know, to me, the three biggest reasons why I wanted the Nexus, okay, one, faster processor.
1 gigahertz.
Okay, two, better high-resolution display. Okay, three, better battery life. Okay, and four, a standard audio jack.
Thank God. HTC is ditching that freaking connector. I hate it. Yeah. You can't use the... I don't use the G1 for listening to music. It's a pain in the butt.
It is. I stopped. I tried for a while. I had one of those converter plugs.
Yeah.
I freaking lost the plug.
I had the converter plug, but I was afraid... Actually, I was afraid of screwing the jack up like yours.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. I bet you that's what I did, man.
And, I fried my the original HTC handset and two others that I bought. I found some like real cheap on Amazon.com, like $2 maybe. They worked and they worked real good, but little pieces, parts of them kept failing. Like usually the connector, or one of the earphones, or something shit like that. Nobody can make a pair of headphones that's worth a damn now.
Yeah, they're all pretty cheap.
That I can afford.
I looked at the manual for the Nexus One. I downloaded it, and apparently they ship you headphones that has a little, like a fast forward little controller dongle on it.
Yeah, it's probably like an iPhone headset or similar to it. It's got a little button thingy on it. It's probably a three conductor, but you can probably use regular old headphones with it. That's the one thing I like about, you know, anything that has a...
And the other thing, I could have got a Droid. I mean, the Droid is, it's dropped in price. It's $99 with a two-year contract, which is a very
sweet.
Good deal. Okay, but I want to keep my T-Mobile account. I'm currently paying $60 a month. I'm very happy with the level of service, you know? I want to keep it, and I didn't want to get into a contract. So, I
don't know. I might switch back. I don't know. It's hard to say.
On Verizon?
Yeah, my wife and my kid are on Verizon right now. And,
I checked out the Devour today, which they used to call it the Calgary. The Motorola phone. The third Verizon phone.
It looks beautiful.
And it's well built. It's heavy. But you know what? That phone should have been out like a year ago. I think the
Motor Blur kind of.
I'm not crazy about that Motor Blur. The Droid is a better deal for $99. It's more powerful.
Dang it, G-Potter. Trying to get G-Potter to sync to my...
Well,
rock
say goodnight, everybody. I'm stopping the recording.
Okay, stop the recording, Dan.
Goodnight, everybody.
Bye. Testing. 1, 2, 3. Yeah. This is what happens. Last night... my daughter accidentally ran up a $500 phone bill.
By accident.
So we have, until I pay the phone bill on Friday when I get paid, we don't have phone service, so I left my Google phone home with my wife because I have SipDroid on it. So if she needs to make calls, she can go out through the Asterisk device. So I was using the SipDroid phone on my laptop here, and I had used the instead of using the normal device I usually use, I lazed out and I forgot that I didn't reset it back to the way I normally do it, and that is why we had some trouble, and now we're good to go. Testing. And look at that. I got rid of the testing 1, 2, 3. Got rid of all that. Pump that baby up. Give me some words.
Locality expired.
Word.
All right.
On my phone.
You got to talk a little louder, Alan, because you are very soft.
I'm sorry. I was talking in the mic. No, I just said Locale, which is a program I had on the Droid here, has expired, and now they want to charge you for it.
Yep.
All you always
screw,
want something
that
free,
one.
Don't you?
That's right.
It wasn't so bad that
you can't get anything good for free, man.
Well, it's not so bad that it expired and they want to charge you for it, but they also want to charge you additional for each function that goes on it. So that sort of
thing. Yeah, I know. I read that too. Notice the same thing. Unfortunately, I haven't found anything that works any better.
What is it? What is the app?
Locale.
It's called Locale.
Are you eating
Locale
again?
I was wondering why all of a sudden my phone was going off in the middle of the night when I thought I turned all that stuff off. Well, let's try this one then.
Oh. Beep. Played with my wife's fuse a little bit last week.
You gotta watch being quoted out of context, man.
Yeah, I know. The fuse, Santa Fuse MP3 player.
Yeah,
I got to play with slot radio.
Link installing Mint on his wife.
Mint?
Yeah.
I'll install a Mint. Make her nice and cool.
On your wife?
Sure, why not?
Your wife doesn't like Linux, you know that.
She doesn't like anything. Sometimes.
It snowed again down here today.
Again?
I walked
Where
out.
Are you?
I'm in Virginia. Virginia Beach.
Yeah, we're down in North Carolina, so got the same kind of dusting.
Yeah, it was like a thick, soupy mess. But
Dave got some, too.
They canceled school anyhow. It was like, come on.
Yeah, the roads were fine. I mean, it was kind of like my favorite snow. It looks pretty, and then the roads are fine, and it goes away by lunchtime. But we had two-hour delays here. I mean,
it snowed here about 6 hours yesterday, but not it stuck, but flakes the size of cotton balls. It's wet snow.
It's just
nothing
stuck.
It's
just
snowed,
the grass and
snowed.
Just grass and trees, huh? Because I've seen pictures.
Not even that.
They should have been. Really?
Wow. No. In places. The temperature hovered between 32 and 33. Like most of the day.
If it ain't colder than that, you guys would have had a ton.
That's right. Texas has its own community-run Linux Fest on April 10th, 2010 in Austin,
yeah,
Texas.
Kick it.
Go to Texas.
Can we hear music this week, too?
For details. And remember,
Linux on. I'm just making sure everything's up and good to go. I'm Austin bound, get my
eyes set on the price. I wish I had some of my Chex Mix I made earlier this week.
Join us for the 2010 Southeast Linux Fest as we once again celebrate Linux and open source software.
Yeah, you're right, I do.
Due to the overwhelming response,
you're right, I do. My tooth doesn't hurt, I can eat.
This year's event will be bigger, better, and longer. Self 2010 will
take place Friday, June 11th through
Sunday, June 13th at the Spartanburg Marriott at Renaissance Conference, Spartanburg, South Carolina. Be there for UbuCon, Fedora Activity Day, BSDA certification, Drupal Camp, multiple parties featuring Dual Core as well as the guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000 as Rift Tracks, and an even more expansive group of superb
nice
speakers,
plug.
Sponsors, and exhibitors. Self is free to attend, but hurry and register today to lock in the special discount room at the hotel.
That's too loud.
Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
Oi, over here. Do you want to buy this?
Loud.
It's the center of the open source
I'm
universe.
I'm loud too, Jesus.
Picked it up last year in Wolverhampton. Only one careful owner. It's a bargain. Oi, come back. Oh. I'm going to have to find something to do with this. Hold on a minute. Yes, that's right. On the first and
tell me something I don't know, Pegwall.
Liverpool is the only place to be for anyone interested in free software, free culture, and
how
free
is that?
Thinking.
Is that okay?
It's the second live Og Camp event,
right,
organized
yeah.
by the Linux Outlaws and the Ubuntu UK podcast.
Yeah,
we've taken the mantle from Lug Radio
Nobody
Live, and we're not giving it back.
Sibilance.
The 2nd of May, 2010,
One.
At the Blackie,
is that okay?
Liverpool. Visit ogcamp.org.
That's fine.
Which is odd because I don't understand. It's not really loud to me. And it's not loud on the recording.
Well, then don't worry about it.
And I don't have a crank too much.
We can lower the headset.
Headphone volume.
All right. Oh, come on.
Excuse me.
People hate that.
No, they hate you farting in the mic.
As much as they hate Dave Yates, that too. All right. What time is it? It's time to start the show. We got some promos. You'll hear the promos. Don't talk because it'll echo back because this cheap-ass sound card. Once those are over, we'll get right into it, Taurus. Looking forward to it. You ready? Everybody ready?